Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. This time, we're going all the way back to 1971 with the landmark Supreme Court case, Lemon v. Kurtzman.
A fascinating case.
Really is, and we've got a fantastic legal brief on this case, as well as all three of the court opinions.
Wow.
So we've got a lot to unpack here.
Yeah.
The basic question of Lemon v. Kurtzman is, can the government support religious schools financially without violating that crucial separation of church and state?
Right, and it gets right to the heart of the First Amendment's Establishment Clause. Can the government help religious schools without appearing to favor or establish a particular religion?
Now, we've got two cases sort of rolled into one here, one from Pennsylvania, one from Rhode Island.
Yep.
And both states were trying to do something to help out struggling non-public schools. A lot of these were Catholic schools. So what exactly were these states trying to do?
Well, both states were grappling with rising educational costs, and they wanted to ensure quality education for all students, regardless of where they went to school. Pennsylvania decided to reimburse non-public schools for teacher salaries, textbooks, and instructional materials.
Okay.
Specifically for secular subjects. So we're talking math, science, foreign languages.
Okay.
Rhode Island took a slightly different approach, choosing to directly supplement teacher salaries in non-public elementary schools by up to 15%.
So it sounds like they were being very careful to say, hey, this money is just for secular education.
Absolutely.
Not for the religious part of it.
Yeah. Pennsylvania's law specifically barred reimbursement for any course that involved religious teaching or the morals or forms of worship of any sect.
Hmm. Interesting. So on the surface, it seems pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't giving money directly to support religious instruction.
Yeah.
But I guess that's where the controversy comes in.
Exactly right. Taxpayers in both states filed lawsuits arguing that these programs crossed the line.
Yeah.
That they violated this principle of separation of church and state.
Right.
And that's how the whole thing ended up at the Supreme Court.
And that is where the Lemon Test comes in. This case is famous for establishing the Lemon Test. Can you break that down for us?
Sure. The Lemon Test is a three-pronged approach that the court developed to determine if government support for religious institutions violates the Establishment Clause.
Okay.
It asks, one, does the statute have a secular legislative purpose?
Okay.
Two, does the primary effect of the statute either advance or inhibit religion?
Right.
And three, does the statute foster an excessive entanglement between government and religion?
Okay, so let's dive into the Lemon Test a little bit. And let's start with that first prong, secular purpose. Seems like both Pennsylvania and Rhode Island were pretty clear that their purpose was secular.
Yeah.
Just trying to support struggling schools and make sure kids get a good education.
Right.
How did the court view that part of it?
The court generally agreed with the states on that first prong.
Okay.
They recognize that states have a legitimate interest in supporting education, even in private schools.
Yeah.
Chief Justice Berger, who wrote the majority opinion, actually acknowledged that a total separation between church and state isn't really practical in the real world.
Interesting. All right. So they kind of passed that first hurdle of the Lemon Test, but I have a feeling prongs two and three are where things get a little bit stickier.
That's where the rubber meets the road, I think, with the Lemon Test.
Yeah.
It's not enough to simply have a good goal in mind.
Right.
The court also wanted to be sure that the primary effect of the law isn't actually helping or hindering religion.
And from what I understand reading about this case, the court seemed particularly concerned about the possibility of religious influence seeping into the secular classrooms,
right,
even if there wasn't like direct evidence that that was happening.
Yeah, the court was really focused on the potential risk of what they call religious influence, especially when it came to the teachers in these religious schools. They worried that even when teaching things like math and science, that teachers might subtly introduce their religious beliefs into their lessons.
Right. And there were some specific things about these schools, particularly the ones in Rhode Island, that made the court a little uneasy, right?
Yes. The Rhode Island schools in this case were heavily affiliated with the Catholic Church and the district court, which the Supreme Court relied on heavily in its decision.
Uh-huh.
Noted that a large percentage of the teachers were nuns, that religious symbols were displayed prominently, and that religious instruction was a big part of the school day.
Right. So the court was looking at the whole picture.
Absolutely.
The whole context.
Mm-hmm.
And there's that famous quote from Chief Justice Berger where he said, "Doctrines in faith are not inculcated or advanced by neutrals."
Yeah. I think that really sums up the court's concern.
Yeah.
They were grappling with this really difficult question. How do you separate religious beliefs from secular teaching when the teachers themselves are employed by and accountable to a religious institution.
Right, so even without like concrete proof that teachers were promoting religion in the secular classroom, the court wasn't comfortable with that possibility.
Yeah, they felt like the risk was just too high in that environment.
Okay, so that brings us to the third prong of the Lemon Test, which is excessive entanglement. And this is where the idea of ongoing monitoring comes into play.
Yeah.
Which the court really did not like. Why was this such a big deal to the court?
Well, they saw this constant monitoring as a form of government intrusion into the affairs of religious institutions.
Right, which obviously raises some red flags.
Absolutely. The court was worried about the level of scrutiny that would be required to make sure state funds weren't being used for religious purposes.
Yeah.
They felt like this constant oversight would lead to an unhealthy blurring of the lines between government and religion. And I think it's important to note that this concern about entanglement, while relevant to both programs, actually came from different aspects of each state's program. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah. It seems like the specific way each program worked kind of played into how the court saw this entanglement issue.
Yeah, definitely. In Pennsylvania, the problem was the need to audit the school's finances to figure out what was a secular expense and what was a religious expense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because Pennsylvania was reimbursing schools after they had already spent the money,
uh-huh.
state officials would have had to dig into these financial records and make judgment calls about what counted as secular versus religious spending.
I can see how that could be a very tricky area.
Yeah, a real recipe for entanglement, as the court saw it.
Yeah.
In Rhode Island, on the other hand, the concern was more about monitoring teachers to make sure they kept the secular lessons truly secular.
Right.
The court imagined state officials looking over teachers' shoulders, scrutinizing their lesson plans, and essentially trying to police religious expression in the classroom.
Yeah, I can see how that wouldn't be a very good situation for anyone involved.
Right. Imagine the logistical nightmare of trying to define exactly what's religious and what's secular in every single lesson.
Oh, yeah. It would just create endless questions about academic freedom and the very nature of religious belief. So the court ultimately struck down both the Pennsylvania and Rhode Island programs, deciding they did create too much entanglement between government and religion.
Exactly. They both failed that third prong of the Lemon Test.
Right.
But it's interesting to note that it wasn't a unanimous decision.
Right. So even on the court, there was some disagreement about whether having religious figures in the classroom automatically meant there would be religious influence.
Exactly.
Can you talk a little bit more about those different perspectives?
Yeah, I think it's really helpful to look at the concurring and dissenting opinions because they give us a much fuller picture of how the justices were thinking about this issue.
Okay.
So let's start with Justice Douglas's concurring opinion. He really emphasized the need for a clear separation of church and state.
Mm-hmm.
What were some of his main points?
Well, it seemed like he was really concerned about making taxpayers fund religious schools, even indirectly.
Yeah. Justice Douglas was known for being a strong defender of individual liberties.
Right.
And he was deeply skeptical of any government involvement in religious affairs.
Yeah.
He essentially argued that forcing taxpayers to support religious schools, even if it's indirect support, violates the Free Exercise Clause.
Mm. So he's looking at it from the perspective of the individual taxpayer.
Exactly. He felt it was a violation of their right to freely exercise their own beliefs.
Okay.
And he also pointed out the practical problems that come with trying to regulate sectarian schools.
Mm-hmm.
His point was you either have to have really intrusive oversight to make sure public money isn't being used for religious instruction, or you risk violating the Establishment Clause by basically looking the other way.
Right, it's like a catch-22.
Exactly. And for Justice Douglas, neither option was acceptable.
Mm.
Then we have Justice White's dissenting opinion. He seemed to feel like the court was being too suspicious of religious teachers.
Right, like maybe they're giving them too little credit for being able to separate their beliefs from their teaching.
Yeah, Justice White was much more comfortable with the idea of government support for religious schools, as long as that support was going towards secular activities.
Okay.
He believed that the benefits of helping these schools, you know, providing a better education for students, easing the financial burden on parents, those things outweighed the potential risks.
So it sounds like he had more faith in the ability of religious teachers to compartmentalize, if you will.
Exactly. He didn't share the majority's view that the mere presence of nuns in the classroom meant that there would be religious indoctrination.
Okay, so we have this range of opinions. The majority setting a fairly high bar for government support with the Lemon Test.
Right.
Justice Douglas pushing for an even stricter separation.
Mm-hmm.
and then Justice White taking a more permissive stance.
And I think that's what makes Lemon v. Kurtzman such a fascinating and enduring case.
Definitely. It really highlights how complex these issues are and how even the Supreme Court justices can disagree about how to interpret such fundamental concepts.
Absolutely. And the complexity is exactly why it's so important.
Yeah, it really makes you think, where would you draw the line, you know, if you were on the court?
It's a tough one, isn't it? Trying to figure out where that line is between supporting religious freedom, but also not having the government establish a religion.
Lemon v. Kurtzman definitely shows just how tricky it is to get that balance right.
Right.
And it's worth pointing out that the court didn't totally shut the door on all forms of government help for religious schools.
Yeah, they acknowledge that there's always going to be some interaction between the government and religious organizations.
Right.
The real challenge is figuring out the limits of that relationship.
Uh-huh.
You know, how do we define those boundaries in a way that respects both the Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause?
So Lemon v. Kurtzman didn't really give us a clear-cut answer.
Not really, no.
But it gave us this framework, this way of thinking about these really complicated issues, a framework that's been both praised and criticized over the years.
Exactly. Some people think the Lemon test is too strict,
uh-huh.
that it builds too high a wall between church and state. Others say it's not strict enough, that it allows the government to get too involved in religion.
And I imagine the court has kind of gone back and forth in how it's applied the Lemon test over the years.
Oh, absolutely. In some cases, they've applied it very differently than they did in Lemon.
Right.
And in other cases, it seems like they've ignored it altogether.
So it's not always been a simple formula.
Not at all.
For deciding these cases.
But even with its flaws, I think Lemon v. Kurtzman is still essential for understanding the relationship between government and religion in the U.S.
Yeah.
It forces us to really grapple with these basic questions about religious freedom, government support, and the meaning of the Establishment Clause.
It almost seems like Lemon v. Kurtzman opened up more questions than it answered.
I think that's a great point, and maybe that's exactly what a landmark case like this is supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
It sparked a conversation that we're still having today.
Right.
It didn't give us a simple answer.
Right.
But it gave us the tools to analyze the problem. And that's important because the role of religion in America has really changed since 1971.
In what ways?
Well, we have all these new religious movements now.
Right.
A growing number of people who don't identify with any religion.
Yeah.
And just a different understanding of what it means to be religious in the 21st century.
So even though this case is decades old, it's still relevant to the challenges we face today.
Absolutely. And the courts are going to continue to play a key role in this debate. They'll have to figure out how much government support for religious schools is okay.
Yeah.
How to balance religious freedom with other rights and interests.
Right.
And how to make sure the government isn't promoting or inhibiting religion.
It seems like that potential for division along religious lines was a big concern for the court in Lemon v. Kurtzman.
Yeah, you see that worry throughout the majority opinion.
Right.
They were afraid that state funding for religious schools would just lead to more political battles,
yeah.
more religious tensions,
mm-hmm.
and ultimately weaken the fabric of society.
It does make you wonder how much we should worry about that today.
Yeah.
I mean, things were pretty different back then.
That's true.
When the court decided this case.
But religion is still a powerful force in American politics.
Right.
And the possibility of religious differences causing conflict is very real.
It's a tough balancing act,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah.
We want to protect religious freedom, but we also don't want religion to become a tool for dividing people.
And that's the challenge before us as a society.
Hmm.
We have to find ways to have respectful conversations across religious divides,
right.
to recognize our shared values,
hmm.
and to make sure government policies aren't making those divisions worse.
That's a big task,
hmm.
but it's so important if we want a fair and just society.
I completely agree. It's a conversation that Lemon v. Kurtzman really pushes us to have.
Yeah. yeah.
It asks us, how do we balance these sometimes competing values of religious freedom,
mm-hmm.
separation of church and state, and social harmony? And there might not be any easy answers, but just wrestling with these questions is crucial for a healthy democracy.
And it's a conversation that each of us needs to have individually, too.
I think that's a great point. Each of us has a role to play in figuring out how religion and government should interact in our society.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Lemon v. Kurtzman, what would you say are the key takeaways for our listeners?
I think the main takeaway is that this case is more than just history.
Uh-huh.
It's a living, breathing document that still shapes how we think about the role of religion in public life.
Right.
And it reminds us that these issues about religious freedom and separation of church and state aren't just abstract ideas for lawyers to debate. They have real consequences for everyone.
Yeah, it's a call to action in a way.
I think that's a great way to put it.
To really engage with these issues thoughtfully and respectfully.
It's a call to try to understand each other even when we disagree.
Right.
And to work towards a society where religious freedom can flourish without undermining the common good.
That's a beautiful thought.
Thank you.
Well, this has been a fantastic conversation.
It really has.
Really appreciate you joining us for this deep dive.
My pleasure. It was great to be here.